Today is July 8th, 1988, and I'm here with Hope Odzek at her home in the Riverside area of Jacksonville, Florida here. And we're going to be talking about icons and icon painting. Okay. Could I have your complete name first?
Hope Odzek.
Odzek, okay.
Odzek. It's pronounced O-J-A-C-K.
Okay.
It's a Serbian name.
Okay. And the spelling for it?
O-D-Z-A-K.
Okay. All right. Can I have your maiden name also?
Dixon.
Okay. And your middle name?
It's Hope.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Okay. We also need your address.
1516 South McDuff Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida.
And the zip code?
32205.
Okay. And we need your date of birth and your birthplace.
August 2nd, 1946, Burlington, North Carolina.
Okay. And we need your education.
High school, 1 year of college, that's it.
Okay. What did you study in college?
Miscellaneous. There was no particular subject.
Okay. And your present occupation?
I am a sales assistant for a TV rep firm.
Okay. All right. And also, I'm interested in your ethnicity because you're not Greek.
No.
Just found out.
Okay. No, my parents are English. And I guess just English lineage, both sides. There may be a little Irish,
oh, but, I see.
Uh-huh. You know, from way, way back.
Mm-hmm.
But just plain old country American.
Okay. And then you eventually moved into the Greek Orthodox Church down here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I started working as a secretary part-time in there when I was going to school. And I had to come to church one Sunday for them to show me how to do the envelopes and everything. And I just fell in love with it. And it was almost 21 years ago. And I've been going ever since.
Okay. I'm interested in how you got your start in the icon painting. Where did that come from?
Well, I'd always drawn and painted in some form or another. And I guess about 10 years ago, I tried my hand at just doing an icon. Just, I don't know why, I just felt like doing it. And then about 5 years ago, I got more serious about it and really started trying to do it. And 4 years ago, let's see, I've been married 4 years. So 4 years ago, last January, I went up to Huntsville, Alabama for a week and spoke with an iconographer up there called Elias Katsaris, who's very, very good, very good Byzantine icon, true Byzantine. And he gave me some pointers, very nice man. But it wasn't enough pointers to really get me into it good, but it was enough to get me started. And now I'm just using really trial and error, and I just keep at it until it looks like it's supposed to look.
Mm-hmm. Could I have a spine for Mr. Katsaris' name? Or, is that possible?
K-T-S-A-R-I-S, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is he a well-known iconographer?
Uh-huh. He's painted icons California, here in Jacksonville, Huntsville, in Canada, all over.
Mm-hmm.
He studied in Greece, and he also studied some here in the States.
Awesome. Does he have a studio where he trains iconographers?
No. He just did that as a favor.
Oh.
The priest we have here at our church knew him from Huntsville because he was a priest in Huntsville for a while. And that's how I made the connection.
I see. So the main way that you've learned the art is both through trial and error, as well as talking to the iconographers and
Yeah.
Okay. Had there been artists in your family at all before?
My sister used to draw a little bit. She's into calligraphy now. Other than that, no, I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anybody that really is into art.
I see. But you were kind of drawing and painting ever since you were young, though. I guess.
Yeah.
I see. Great. Okay. Are there any other iconographers that have given you pointers?
No, mostly books, and then I've gotten a tape from a Russian iconographer in Winter Park.
Hmm.
But I don't have a that you hook up to your TV.
Oh, the VCR?
VCR. We don't have a VCR, so the only time I get to view it is when I take it down to church.
Oh.
It doesn't do me much good. So it is an excellent tape. But like I say, it is a Russian iconography. And there are some differences in the different nationalities.
Have you taught other people?
No.
No.
I wouldn't presume to know enough to really teach anybody else.
Oh, you
know, someday I wouldn't mind if I developed the knowledge, but I know that I'm not doing a lot of these things correctly.
Mm.
So I would hate to get someone else started in the wrong way.
I see. Okay. I'm interested a lot in how the icons are used in the church. Can you give me kind of a background on the icons' role within the Orthodox faith there?
The icons are images that you view as you go into the church. We venerate them, meaning we respect them. When we venerate the icon of Christ, then the veneration then turns to worship, not of the icon or the image, but of Christ. So you're not really worshiping or respecting the icon itself, you're respecting the image of the saint or the event that is taking place in the icon. The church, that's only one part of the church, because the church really uses all of your senses. You have your sense of eyes for the icons. You have your sense of smell from the incense. You have your sense of touch when you do the sign of the cross. It takes all of your senses into respect, which is, I think, one of the things that I really loved about church. You know, it involved your whole being. The icons are placed on a lot of them on a screen, which separates the altar from the nave. Originally, that's the only purpose. That was the only purpose of the screen, and then they developed a group of icons together, which I think it's called Deisis. Deisis is D-E-I-S-I-S, which is a meaning of prayer, group of prayer. And when that was put on the screen, which is called iconostasis, it really brought the spiritual closer to the reality, to the people. Icons are just, I don't know, you look at them and it reminds you of these particular saints or these happenings. Mm-hmm. Now, in the older churches, they used a lot of gold leaf. One reason was because the churches in Greece at that time, there were no windows. And the gold reflected light, and therefore it lit up the inside of the church.
I see. Uh-huh. Yeah. I noticed in the church also that there's icons both whenever you go into the sanctuary area, in addition to the sanctuary itself.
Yeah. And those you venerate, you light a candle. One is usually of the Panagia, or the Mother of Christ, and the other one is of the patron saint of the church. In our case, it would be St. John the Divine.
I see. Okay. Is there any special position that those are on? Like, would you have the patron saint of the church, say, on the right side or the left side, or would it matter?
I don't think it really matters. Now, it matters on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
On the screen, the Christ is always on the right-hand side as you're looking at the screen. The Mother of Christ is on the left-hand side. St. John the Baptist is on the side next to Christ. So it's on his, the right side over that way.
Okay.
So there is a certain set as to how some of them go.
Okay.
And then you have the name, the saint of the church, and then over the doors you have Archangel Michael and Archangel Gabriel.
Okay. The icons any other place besides just the screen?
You have them all. You can also have them on the side walls.
Mm-hmm.
You can have them anywhere.
Mm-hmm. You know. Could you give me a basic idea of what's represented in the icons? What would you expect to see in some of the typical paintings like that?
Okay, icons usually portray the saints. Christ is one of the main ones, and then you have the Panagia, which is his mother, and she is usually holding Christ. Some of the more popular saints, you've got St. John's, you've got St. John the Baptist, St. John the Divine, Saints Paul and Peter, Matthew. I mean, all of them are really depicted. There aren't quite as many women saints for some reason. I don't know why. But in the group scenes, it's usually the Last Supper. That is usually in all churches. In fact, as it's over, it's up over the screen. And then they have special ones that they bring on holidays, Passover, the Annunciation, the baptism, crucifixion. On those particular days, they have icons that they put out. Now, these aren't left out during the year.
Oh, they just put out in front of the screen there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then if we have a procession, sometimes they're carried in the procession.
Oh, I see. Okay. And some of those represent both just representations of what they would expect the saints to look like, as well as different stories or narratives from the Bible and things like that?
I guess you couldn't say that they really are identical to what the saint looked like. Because, I mean, who knows?
Right.
You're talking about thousands of years ago. And that's one reason that when you do an icon, you do copy it as exactly as you can. A particular look or face is representative of a particular saint, because this is the way it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
The one to me that stands out more than, well, there are two that I don't know I can pick out anywhere. One is St. Nicholas. For some reason, his face just has a special look about it. And the other one is St. John the Baptist. And St. John the Baptist, because his hair is always in disarray. He has hair sticking up all over the place, and that's because he was in the desert. And, you know, but those two in particular kind of stand out in my mind. But the scenes really are telling stories. And ages ago, people didn't read, and this is the way they reminded people of what had happened. And it was a picture book.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering if there's, we mentioned a little bit about some of the special icons in the church, like the patron saint of the church, or the Mother of God.
Yeah, Panagia is the Greek.
Panagia, So each church would have then its own patron saint?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What's the role of the patron saint for the church there?
It's not really a role. It's just whoever the church happened to be named after.
Oh, I see.
In our case, it was St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church.
Okay.
You have a Church of the Annunciation, and that would...
Oh, so that might commemorate then a special event or something like that, rather than just a saint. Okay,
yeah.
I see. And then you'd have an icon that would represent the Annunciation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Also, we talked a little bit about some of the symbolism in some of the icons you mentioned. Mm-hmm. That. What are some of the things that would be symbolic?
Well, the way they hold their hands. Christ always has his held a certain way.
With the thumb touching the third finger?
You've got the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and you've got the spiritual and the... lost for words here. The spiritual and the reality.
I see.
You know, Christ as Christ is from God, and then Christ is as Christ was from Mary. You know, do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of hard to describe. The colors, certain saints have certain colors, their robes are always painted. Christ's robe is purple, especially in the icons of his crucifixion, in the agony before the crucifixion when he was on the cross. The purple representing royalty and also representing death. White represents purity, believe it or not, pale yellow represents death or tragedy. So all the colors have some type of meaning, and
the, How about any symbolism behind settings for the paintings or anything like that? Would that show up there? Maybe things in the background?
I'm sure there are. I don't know offhand, like I say, about... We have volumes of books at church about the different icons. I mean, even the priests don't know all the meanings behind them.
I suppose it would vary also from region to region. Like, say, I'm sure the Russian icons would be different from, like, the Byzantine or... And some of the symbolism.
Basically, they're the same.
Oh.
Basically, they're the same. Their technique of painting varies. It's from island to island in Greece. Some of the colors came from Italy and infiltrated, and they changed some of their... You'll find, like in our church, something that is not Byzantine is the pink colors of the icons. I mean, that's not a Byzantine... I mean, that's really not a Byzantine color. Byzantine colors are earth colors. They're the browns and the dark blues and the burnt colors. I mean, you know, they're very brown-oriented colors. That's all I know how to say. Mm-hmm. And they don't have these pinks and the baby blues. And I mean, that's just not Byzantine.
I see. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the first things you look at. And then you look at the face. A Byzantine face is elongated. It's long. The Renaissance, they hit some of them, and they changed it. They started to make it more human. And these faces are not supposed to be human. They're not supposed to represent someone human. It's a spiritual representation.
That's it.
So that's why you're trying to stay away from it.
Okay, and that's where you're going into the more stylized thing rather than something fully representative.
Yeah.
Okay. I was also wondering about the halos. Which figures will be given a halo in the icons?
All the saints will be.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, all the saints will be. Now on the... we have icons for... the one I'm doing now on the Ascension. You find that the three... saints at the bottom do not have halos, but this was prior to them being given the Holy Ghost and the Spirit. So that to me is the only reason that they don't have halos. Now, I don't know for sure, but that's the only... That makes more sense than anything else.
And you could see that, especially if they were going to use it to tell a story behind it.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there different ways of doing the halos represented? Would you use like a different halo for Christ versus for the disciples or anything?
Christ's halo usually has something written in it.
Oh.
Other than that, no, they're all the same.
Okay. And the symbolism in the icons is just really interesting to me because it's so rich.
The looks that they have, you know, the way they hold their heads and all. I mean, it all symbolizes something. To know what it is something I would like. But the problem is a lot of the things that describe icons or how to do them are all in Greek.
Mm.
And they're just now starting to translate this stuff.
I suppose there's probably symbolism in the facial expressions even too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perhaps even in the folds of the cloth or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering also about some of the different styles of icons. We mentioned the Byzantine and then different styles within the Greeks also.
Well, Byzantine is the true icon. You have those the reason is because of whoever taught them or from whatever island they're from. It's what they grew up with. The style has either gotten some Renaissance flavor to it with the colors or with the faces. Also, the different nationalities, the shapes of the faces are slightly different. Russian, Serbian, all of those. But the true one is the Byzantine.
I see. Okay. So then each of the different nationalities will have kind of their own style?
Yeah, I can show you pictures of the different ones. You can tell the difference.
Okay.
The Russian is pretty close to the Greek, but there is a slight difference.
What style do you work in?
Byzantine.
Yeah. How did you decide to choose that particular style?
Because it's the true style.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I mean, I've been brainwashed. And I really love that style. It's it was the original one, and I just feel like that's the basic style. It has not been tainted.
I see.
By anything.
And that's the type that would be at St. John's, the Divine Church, right?
That is Byzantine, but it does not have Byzantine colors in it, oh. I'm afraid. I don't care for the colors in it. You can't please everybody.
Oh, I see. So we brainwashed you into going the Byzantine style.
Elias Koutsaris.
Oh, I see.
When I went to him, he is true Byzantine. And we talked a lot about that when I was there.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, yeah, I thought maybe it had been in the church that was what it is, yeah. Jewish.
As a matter of fact, before we had these icons, we really had icons far from being Byzantine. The old icons from the old church when it was downtown.
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm kind of interested in some of the history of icons. What's the origin for them? How far did they go back there?
To the original apostles.
Oh.
And then, I guess in the period of 697, something like that, to 780, it was a period in our church when they took all the icons out, and iconoclasm, I think they called it. And then they came back in for a short period, maybe 40 years, and then they were out again for another, I guess, 40 years. Hmm. And then they came back totally. I think the main thing they were fighting against was they said that you could not represent God on an icon. You know, you can't put something holy on wood and all. And you can't worship it. And they were trying to tell me you're not worshiping the icon. You know, you're worshiping the representative, the Christ that's represented there. And then you're not worshiping the icons of the saints, you're just simply respecting them, you're venerating them. But it was a true holy war. They tortured monks that followed them. If they found icons, they would kill you. You know, it was very, very bad. And this thing covers it. It's
the book on the icon.
The book on the icon. It's very sad, the things they went through. I mean, you talk about non-Christians murdering and stoning and burning Christians, but these Christians were doing the same thing to Christians, and that's really sad.
Yeah.
Over something, well, icons.
The book's called The Icon.
Mm-hmm. Who's it written by? It's a translation.
Written by Egon Sendler. Uh-huh. Sendler.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'll have to check that out. Okay. Also, I'm interested in how the icons have been used in the home over time. I understand, like in Russia, for example, they'd have that separate corner called the Icon Corner, mm-hmm. where it's kind of a shrine, and all the peasant houses had that. That's just an accepted part of the
most
home.
Orthodox homes will have a special area set aside for icons and for worship. And,
I see. It's just like the area that you have mm-hmm. back. I see.
Yeah. It's a very special place. It's your own church within your home.
Mm-hmm.
Every year in January, the priest comes and he blesses your home. He blesses that area. It's just a special area in your home.
Oh, I see.
And you try and have icons scattered through the house, too. You know, I've got I've got three in the bedroom and one in the kitchen. You know, you just kind of scatter them around. Mm-hmm. There are people that have them in every corner of the room so that no matter where you look, you actually see an icon. Mm. And it's just a reminder. Mm. We all need reminders, I'm afraid. I do, anyway. Help me keep my temper sometimes.
mm-hmm. Okay. So, is it a tradition to hang an icon by the door? Like you have the...
Yeah, as you come in.
Uh-huh.
In fact, is it the first thing you should bring in a house when you move is your icon, one icon. Kind of puts things in their place.
Oh, I see. Okay. I suppose you learned a lot of these traditions as you came into the faith of the Orthodox.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Orthodox faith has not changed in hundreds of years, well, since it first formed. I mean, all of the traditions that are in the church are from back then, you know, is you don't cross your legs in church because nice women don't cross their legs.
Mm-hmm.
And to be truthful, it's not healthy. Here I'm sitting with my legs. It's not healthy to cross your uh-huh. legs. You know, it cuts off your blood circulation. So there's some good points to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Orthodox do not believe in cremation. And that's not because that it's a bad thing, because, I mean, dust to dust, right? But back when the church was first formed, the way they killed Christians was they burned them. Mm-hmm. They cremated them. So, therefore, cremation was thought to be bad.
Yeah.
So, and that's stuck since then. Taking communion, if you're taking communion in your church, you can't take communion in another church. Not another Orthodox, but a Baptist or a Presbyterian church, because back then, there was only the Orthodox Church. You know, if you took communion elsewhere, then you weren't taking communion in a church. You were actually partaking of a non-Christian thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it states that you can't take communion outside of your church.
Yeah.
Of course, then outside of the church was totally outside of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not, but still it's there, and it's a law that was put in, written into the church
mm-hmm.
by human beings back when it really had a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take some of the good stuff with the bad. I don't want the church to change any of these old things because it's steadfast, it's dependable, and it's always there for you.
Yeah.
And you just have to adjust a little.
Uh-huh. You know? That's something that also sets apart Orthodox Christians from the other types. Like, you wouldn't see a shrine like that in very many other denominations
no.
in their homes.
No, the most you'll see in someone else's home is maybe a Bible laying out. Maybe.
Yeah.
And in most times you won't see a Bible laying out either.
Yeah. Or maybe some pictures on the wall or something like that. That's about it. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I knew that it was part of the Russian tradition to have that corner there, but it's kind of interesting to see it, you know, carried on into the 20th century here in Jacksonville, Florida. We've got something very similar to that icon corner there.
All the Orthodox, I mean, I'm talking Greek, Serbian, Russian, Syrian, Ethiopian. We have Ethiopians in our church. There's a very big Ethiopian Orthodox group. And Ethiopia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, is our church, the Orthodox Church, sent people over last summer to help build a church in one of the rural communities over there. So the Orthodox Church is really a large church. It's just broken up into a lot of nationalities. So we don't have an American Orthodox yet. All these nationalities have come to America, and the names have stuck in Greek, Russian.
Uh-huh.
But in Jackson, we have a St. George Syrian Orthodox. I don't know if they call it Syrian or what they call it, but it is St. George Orthodox.
Okay. Let's see. Also, I noticed that it was a tradition to kiss the icon before they go into the sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Is that that's the Mother of God one that's typically kissed, right?
They both are.
Oh, they both are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Uh
huh.
And that's a way of venerating them, right?
Right.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see how we're doing on tape here. Oh, I need to flip it over.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm wondering about how many icons that you've completed yourself.
Oh, goodness. I don't know. It's because I've given a lot away. I've sold some. There's a little church down at a camp, an Orthodox camp downstate, and I've done the icons in that little chapel, which I was really honored to have the opportunity to do that. But it's hard to say. I lost count.
What's the name of that church down there, the chapel that you've done them for?
Oh, it's, let's see if it's in here. They're talking about the camp the other day. Just as camp applications. For some reason, I can't think of the name of the camp.
Okay.
But it's just north of Tampa.
There's probably not too many Orthodox camps in Florida.
No, that's the only one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a little chapel there.
Okay. Have you done any for other churches besides that one?
No. Mm-hmm. Now I've done some icons for our church, but they're not where they're seen. They're behind the altar, and they come out like at Passover or
for some Easter. Of special occasions.
Yeah. In fact, it's these two large ones I'm doing will be going into the church.
Okay. Do you know of any other icon painters in the area here?
Somebody was saying the other day they talked to someone, but I don't know of any in the area. I'd love to meet with somebody.
I know of a Romanian icon painter who's just moved into the area. I intend to look him up pretty soon.
Yeah, let me my name or whatever.
Sure, I can get you two in touch, because I'm sure he'd be interested in talking to you.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a woman. Anna is her name. Uh-huh. Or they call her Anya.
Uh-huh.
So, and yeah, she's from Romania.
Interesting.
Okay. I also saw in the paper there was an icon painter down in St. Augustine, too. I missed that one. Okay.
I don't know if...
That's it.
I don't know of anybody. Now, I know they've got some icons down there in the shrine that they sell, but I didn't think it was from anybody local that was doing it. I thought they were getting some of them from Greece or maybe.
Well, you've had some newspaper coverage yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really special.
Really?
Surprise, too.
Uh-huh. When were the stories coming out?
It was several years ago, and we were preparing for the festival. I guess it was, let's see, 1, 2, 3... Oh, I guess it was 4 years ago, and we were getting ready for our festival. Every September we have a festival, and we had built a little village, and I was doing the icons for the church that goes in the little village. So, in fact, as we're building the village again for this year, so you should come to that.
Looking forward to the festival.
It's going
to
be real good this year.
All right.
Last 2 years weren't that, but this one's going to be real good.
I see. So. Okay, great. Yeah, I'm really interested in finding other ethnic traditions like that, so I'm sure we'll see quite a bit celebrated there. I understand you've got a pretty active dance troupe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The music and the dancing, the food.
Great.
Yeah, and they have, I think SCCJ players are going to perform a Greek play, and they'll have travel logs. I think there's someone there that's going to talk about stamps through the history of Greece.
Okay. I'm wondering if there's any famous icons in the area, or something that's really well known by an important icon painter.
The ones at the shrine, and then in Tampa, or not Tampa, but I'm terrible. I can't think of names. Just north of Tampa. Torbid Springs.
Oh, mm-hmm.
They have an icon there that supposedly cried in the church. And then they have a little chapel on one of the side streets. I think it's St. Michael's.
Mm-hmm.
But a famous...
No. Is that even a part of the tradition? Like, would there be famous icons throughout the world or anything? Or something well known?
I think the only thing that would really make it famous is if it happened to cry or someone felt that it had something to do with a miracle. Because the icons themselves are not really... you don't worship the icon and you don't really...
Mm-hmm. I was thinking like an equivalent to the Sistine Chapel in iconography. that's just not a part of the tradition.
No, I would say that the little shrine in St. Augustine would be about the closest you could come to a Sistine Chapel down here.
Okay.
It's have you ever been down there?
I've been down there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. My problem is when I go into something like that, God forgive me, I look at the icons so close, because I want to look at their techniques, and I probably see a lot of things other people don't see, so not so good. I don't concentrate on the service at all. It's terrible.
Oh, well. It helps you paint better icons, I'm sure. you mentioned about some miracles associated with icons. Are there like other beliefs that are kind of associated with the icons? Like, it's kind of a difficult question to answer, but would there be other types of miracles or miraculous happenings that that people believe tend to happen?
Yeah, no, the only thing I can remember is just the icon showing tears, and there was one up north recently. I think it was last year. And of course, they tested and everything. Mine will never cry. That's okay. It would... I don't know. I would like to see one that had. It, I imagine it would be very moving. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. People grasp at straws sometimes when they want things to happen. And sometimes that's good and sometimes it's bad. If it's not true, it's bad, you know. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, icons are not meant to be held in that light. Mm-hmm. It's the image on the, you know, it's like some people don't like glass over an icon because when they kiss it, they want to kiss the icon. What difference does it make? You're showing respect whether you're kissing the icon or the glass on top of the icon. It's the person portrayed in the icon. The icon is nothing.
Yeah. So, Harriet had been telling me that there were some kind of superstitions in the past about them, but sometimes the clergy had to do a lot of instructing to them, you know, get them away from the idea that they have an icon in their home just to bring them good luck or something like that.
Yeah.
I would suppose that kind of some of that would be falling with people wanting to find miracles, and some of them that would be kind of dubious there. Okay. But still, the Orthodox Church does accept, like, miracles happening in the present age.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Could you give me a basic idea of how you go about preparing an icon, the kind of steps along the way of making one?
Okay. It really depends on the material you start with, whether it's wood or canvas or the particle board. Whatever you use, well, let's say wood. Okay, you sand the wood, you put a layer of gesso, which is a white, almost like a whitewash. Then you sand it, you put gesso, sand it, gesso, sand it, gesso, sand it, gesso, until it gets glassy smooth. My husband helps me a lot with sanding because I'm terrible at sanding. I don't like to sand. And he can get it a lot smoother than I can. Then you draw your image on a separate sheet of paper. And then you trace it onto the piece of wood. Then you put down your gold adhesive, let it dry to the texture you need. Then you apply your gold leaf. Then you let that set overnight, brush off the loose, and hope that you've got everything covered that you were supposed to have covered. And then what I do is I put another protective coating of that over it. It's a varnish is what it is. And let that dry. And then you put on your basic colors. Icons are painted dark to light. Everything else is painted light to dark. But icons are dark to light.
Why is it painted that way?
Tradition. Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't know. A lot of mine go from light to dark, but it comes up to the same. You do it the way it comes out right, but you're supposed to do it dark to light. And I try. Yeah. I try doing it dark to light.
Maybe there's some symbolism behind that, the idea.
I don't know.
It's
just hard to say.
The light appears quite as a symbol quite often in Christianity. Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe like bringing lightness to dark or something on that one.
That Easter
good
time.
Good theory.
Yeah. You come to our church at Easter time, it's beautiful. That's one of the most hallowed times of our church. Mm. It's a very, very beautiful time. Anyway, then you just keep getting lighter and lighter. Usually each color has approximately three different depths of darkness. You can get up to four, but normally three is the usual. guess that's it. The final thing you do is put your lettering in, and then most icons have a fine white line outlining the icon, and then the rest of it's red outside of that general red border frame. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. That's just the way it is. That's mm-hmm. most of the time. Mm-hmm. And then after all that, then you put one final coat of varnish over the whole thing to seal it. Mm-hmm. Because they are kissed a lot mm-hmm. and touched a lot. Mm-hmm. If you don't protect it, it's not going to last very long.
Mm-hmm. So. How long would it take you to complete, say, a small icon? Maybe something about 5 inches by 8 inches?
Yeah, it's hard for me to say because I only work on at nighttime and the weekends when I have time.
Oh, I see.
So I've spent anywhere from a month to 2 months on an icon.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, and you also have to allow for drying time. If the weather's not just right, icon I've got laying in there should have dried in 3 hours. And the top part, I put it on the varnish Saturday morning, and I just flipped it yesterday, which was Wednesday, and it still felt a little tacky, but I turned it anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it took that long for it to dry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, who knows? It's the moisture in the air, or I don't stick anything in the oven anymore.
Why not?
I may have an antique.
Right. Now, you were telling me about the icon that you did that.
My mother cooked. But the nice part is when you work on an icon and you do something and you don't know how you did it, you get the facial expression and you sit back and you say, how did I do that? And you know that you didn't do it yourself, you know, that he's working through you to do it. That's when it's special. You know, that's when it means a lot. Mm-hmm. Or when you sit down and you draw one out, and you draw it out with no problem. Because I can sit down and draw one out, and I mean, I have to go back and redo it. The proportions aren't right. I redo it. I do this. I erase. And then I sit down, and I do take one, and I just do it right away. And it's amazing. You just feel like, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. It's, you know, and it's special. It's a type of... like preaching, or, you know, like a priest. This is a type of the worship, you know, it's a prayer, and when it comes together, it's really nice. And there are times when I'm not in the mood, or when it doesn't hit, and I know that if I pick up a brush, I'm just going to destroy anything I touch, you know. But there are other times when, like I say, you sit down and you work, and you work trying to get a certain expression or whatever, and you kind of feel exasperated, you put the brush down, you come back later, and you do a little line or something, and all of a sudden it's there, and you think, how did I do that? You know? Mm-hmm. So
I suppose that's what makes it so different from the other types of artwork that you've done.
Yeah.
You probably don't get quite that feeling with painting a picture of your father or something like that.
No.
Yeah, you were telling me that you only do icons now. That's the only type of painting?
Yeah.
Huh.
I just felt like that's what I was supposed to be doing, and if I have time to paint, that's what I should be painting, and not something else. So.
Okay. I'm also interested in some of the different materials that you're using in the icons. You said that you've done some on the fiberboard or
particle board.
Particle board.
Yeah, it's heavier. It lasts a lot longer than wood will. It stays flat. It doesn't warp. It doesn't crack. But it is extremely heavy.
Mm-hmm. And you've also used just a regular type of wood.
Mm-hmm. Just regular wood. And I try and brace it on the back when I use wood. You don't have to. I braced the one behind you because it was cracking. Some people don't mind it when an icon warps because it just kind of lends to the flavor of it. That, you know, it may take it 50 years to warp or 50 years to crack, but eventually it will. Now, usually a lot of the older icons are done with canvas glued onto the board. Then if the board cracks, the icon itself is not damaged because it's on material.
That's it. Okay.
But, and then I work on stretch canvas also.
Okay. Is there any tradition that says which type of materials you'd be using in some representations or anything? No?
No, not really.
Yeah. I was wondering if there was any reaction to use the particle board, if it was a break from the tradition.
But, no, most people don't prefer wood. Most people prefer wood. Now, you can't really, when you're talking about the size of the larger icons I do, you can't really do that on wood. I mean, you can, but what you have to do is you have to piece the wood together. Because otherwise, I guess you could paint on plywood, but I don't know. I don't know how long plywood would last.
That warps real bad, too. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would know is if you did it on wood and then but you would have to glue the canvas over it. Now, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. How about with the paints? Are there any special types of paints that you're using?
Use acrylic paint. Don't use oil, because acrylic has that lighter color to it.
Oh, I see.
Oil is too deep and it too heavy.
Oh.
And a lot of them use egg-based paint. They mix their own, but you have to get the powders from the grease, really. Mm. You can't get the powders locally. And you use egg yolk and vinegar and then the paint. And I tried, when I went to Huntsville, he gave me some samples of the colors and I came back. I used up, I don't know how many dozen eggs trying to get enough egg yolk out. And you have to be real careful because you have to get the skin off the egg yolk, you know, and it's terrible. And then the colors, I guess you really have to be shown how to do it firsthand. And then it takes practice. But I mean, just to get a little bit of paint, you know, they must spend weeks just getting their paint together. It's terrible. Okay, well, I'll go to the store and buy the acrylic. He said I could use acrylic paint. You know, that's what I'll do.
How about some of the tools? Are there any special brushes or anything, or is it pretty much just standard painting?
Most of it's just standard painting, just good brushes. And you have to have, especially with smaller icons, you have to have a lot of fine, detailed brushes.
I noticed with the incredibly fine work that you're doing on the hands and folds and the cloth, that you need something real, real small.
Very, very small. Very time-consuming. And, of course, before, with the gold leaf, before it was attached to the sheets of paper, you had to use a special brush. And the thing is, I can show it to you. It's you run it through your hair to get static, and that's how you lift the gold leaf up to apply it.
Huh.
Of course, if you breathe while you're doing it, or somebody walks through the room, or anything happens, that gold leaf is going to go off to who knows where. You know? It's
It'd be a bad thing to be allergic to.
Yeah, very bad, very bad.
Okay. Have you given away many icons?
I used to give away quite a few when I did them before. I don't give them away very often anymore because it's so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the gold leaf alone on one of those icons is $40.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you go into your paints and the canvas and all, and it runs into money.
Mm-hmm.
I have the little church at the camp. I did those for cost.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I did a Lord's Supper that I gave them.
Mm-hmm.
But the others I did for cost.
Mm-hmm. Are there ones you sold then to people in the area?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you have any problems with being able to sell them? Is there kind of a pretty good demand for them?
Well, I don't go out and search for business because I don't have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more word of mouth and when somebody wants one done. I guess if I advertised or really put out the word, then I would probably have more than I could handle.
Mm.
As it is now, sometimes you have to wait 3 or 4 months or even up to 6 months, people have had to wait for an icon. But I tell them, you know, I do it, I can't guarantee a deadline date because I don't know how it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the ones that I've already working on or promised, so if people can't wait for me to get to it, then they just can't wait. I'm not I just, they'll have to go elsewhere. So it's not something I can work under pressure on.
Okay.
So.
You mentioned some of the real conservatism in the icon painting, where it's got to look a certain style as it has in the past like that. What are some other things that you look at to see that an icon's done properly? or done well.
Well, I look at the detail work on it. Sometimes you can tell if one is done in a hurry or, what's the word I want to use? Where one is done right after the other. Like in a...
In production?
Yeah, like a production line. I don't ever want to get like that where I feel like I'm doing something production-wise. Every icon I do is different because every one I do is from scratch. And like I say, you know, the shrine, those icons are beautiful down there, and they're much more beautiful than anything I could ever do at this point. But yet I look at them and I see where they were done quickly. You know, I see where lines went over lines and where detail is not quite as sharp as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I know that I could not have done those icons down there, but still, I feel they should have been done better. They were done fast. Mm-hmm. You know? And they had to work fast. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, critic in me. I mean, if I see a little mistake on one of my icons, it drives me crazy, especially if I've already varnished it and finished it. That's why after I do an icon, I try and sit it up and look at it for a couple of days before I put a final coat of varnish on it, because I'm always finding something. And I usually find one more thing after I've varnished, and it drives me crazy.
So you're your own worst critic, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, mainly the types of icons that you're doing are different ones that you've seen, right? You're doing pictures of them or something along that line, right?
Yeah, I have a large inventory of pictures.
I see. Okay. I would suppose that would be the way a lot of icon painters would work, that you wouldn't just come up with something original out of your own.
Yeah. There's nothing original.
I see. You're just, all icon painters would be copying other ones in the past.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. What else? I'm wondering also if there's any special schools for training icon painters, like even throughout the world, or is it just, I'm wondering how most icon painters learn the art, I guess.
By working with other iconographers. Now, this organization I belong to of iconographers that's just formed, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago in the United States, they have started a school. They found a home. They were located in California. Now they're in Pennsylvania. And they are going to do 2-week classes, which isn't enough really to teach a lot. But they can get you hands-on experience. They're there to be with you. And then you can go into further classes. But they felt 2-week classes were enough to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the closest thing to a school that we've got in the United States. And I don't know if overseas, if there's anything or not, you know, in Greece.
Uh-huh. I was wondering in the past how the icons were done. Were they done as part of our schools or anything like that at all?
No, just hand, you know, you get with a monk and the monk teaches you, or, you know, that's just the way it was.
Oh, I see. So often the clergy would be doing
it. Type.
Oh, I see.
Work.
Uh-huh. And often the clergy would be doing the icon thing?
Yeah. Okay. Monks. Mainly monks did it back then, you know, that was...
I see.
Because it was constant prayer and constant fasting when you were working on icons and...
Okay. Is there anything really important that I'm missing about iconography that I should be asking about? I've gone through most of my questions here.
I can't think of anything.
Okay. Not sure if I'd review some of the books and articles. I'd have a lot more to ask you, but...
Yeah. Well, that would answer a lot of your questions,
too. Yeah, that's
too.
True. Okay. All right. I was wondering if there's any other things that you'd really suggest that I look for in the Greek community in town here. Some different types of traditional arts or music or food or... anything that stands out as being really interesting?
I can't think of anything. You know, it's too bad our festival's not here now. You can go to that. The church is the main state of the Greeks. Mm-hmm. It's I mean, everything seems to kind of evolve around the church. Not that they're all holy or anything like that, you know, but I mean, that's just been the, you know, from the islands and from the the villages. Mm-hmm. The church was the main gathering place.
Yeah. A real center of the community there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just a very religious people, even though, I mean, we act just as rambunctious as a lot of other people. But you always come back. I mean, it's, I guess because the church requires so much from the people that attend. You know, you have your fasting, which most churches don't ask for anymore. And you just have certain demands put upon you. It's a lot stricter than most churches. So, and like I say, it's in the home. It's just all around you.
Yeah. But at the same time, it doesn't seem like it's a real confining type thing, like as compared to other approaches toward religion.
It's a happy religion.
Yeah, that's what I get that sense. You don't have a real suspicion of outsiders there, see with some of the fundamentalist sects or anything like that?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. We like to have fun.
I was really impressed with the warmth of the congregation when I was there. Both with talking to Harriet and the father there and some of the other members when I was taking pictures at the church as well as at the Greek festival. And then also I came and visited the church about 2-3 months ago. They were very open, very warm.
Oh, yeah. That's a fantastic church.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your help here. This is really interesting. Some good stuff on tape here.
Thank you.